Olá a todos, bem-vindos a mais um Cranking Podcast, um episódio muito, muito especial, como podem ver pela imagem, para quem conhece, temos connosco Bale Wilcox, uma pessoa ligada ao ultraciclismo. A Bale venceu este ano, e vamos falar sobre isso, a Arizona 800, uma corrida muito importante. Houve alguma polémica pelo meio, mas já lá vamos. Portanto, esta edição 2 do Cranking vai ser toda em inglês. Hi, Lael, once more, thank you for your time here. Once that you are between trips, between Iceland, or you have been in Iceland, now you are in the United States, and you go to Anchorage, and then you came to Europe again, I think, no?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Many thanks. So, I'm going to start for Arizona 800. I'm going to speak... Cool. I'm going to ask, what do you think about the people that made that kind of stupid rules?
And that, yeah. Oh my God, what a place to start. Yeah, I have a long history with the Arizona Trail. Actually, it was my first video project in 2015, and it started with the Arizona Trail. And I actually had to quit that attempt, but they still made a movie about it. And then I've been thinking about it ever since. So 7 years later, I finally get a chance to go after it again. And of course, I want to document it again. And I actually didn't know that the rules had changed. When I wrote it before, it was fine to make a video. And in the past 2 years, they've made new rules saying that you can't be documented while you do these big adventures. And I think it's a total shame because I want to share these stories. I mean, it's... one thing for me to ride something, and of course I'm going to try my hardest and I have this wonderful experience, but then if I don't document it or I don't have help, I can't share that with others. I can't show people what it looks like. I can't try to encourage them to get out there, to push their limits, to see this beautiful place, because otherwise it's just a line on the map. Yeah. So I find it a little disheartening that there's some criticism, but I find that it's amazing that so many people came out to speak openly to support me, because this should not be controversial. I don't understand. I mean, I think there are so many ways that you could cheat. You could have people bring you food and water. You could have somebody fix your bike. You could, I mean, do so many different things that would be supportive, that would affect your ride, but having someone take your picture does not change your ride. I mean, they're just there to kind of capture what you're doing, and that's it. And that's ethically how I do it too. I continue, I try to stay as focused as I can. If anything, it might be a bit distracting. So I don't know. I think it's a little ridiculous, but I'm happy that I got to do the ride, happy that I got to finish, and happy that I got to share the story. So everything's good.
Yeah, I have the same opinion. It's my opinion, but I think it doesn't make sense for me because it's only documenting. It's to help other people to see what kind of things that we have in this kind of sport or in this way of make sport. So I don't understand why they said, no, your record, it's not.
When we take a broader look, it's like, you know, how many people even know bikepacking exists? Like 1,000 people, you know, there's true. A huge world out there. And I don't think everybody has to go bikepacking, but I would love for them to see that this is a possibility. This is something they could do. They could engage in this sport somehow. They could travel the world. They could go for an overnight from home. They could bring their kids. They could bring, you know, their friends. So I just feel like we're still at the stage where people don't even know this is a possibility. So I feel like more stories might reach more people. So I'm very motivated to keep doing it.
You think that it was a man making the same thing that you make to be a problem?
No,
it's a very honest question, this one.
I know.
I think that it was not a problem.
I know.
It could be not a problem.
Yeah, I know, because there's a history of men doing these things and making videos about them, and nobody had a problem with that until I did it.
Yeah.
So exactly. I think that's exactly the point, is that it's because I'm a woman doing it, you know? So, but
it's strange. I mean, it's strange.
Strange
for me that I'm here in Portugal, just seeing everything through the internet. And I remember seeing a post, I think from Tagus Martin, something like that. And he was very upset about why they are making this to her. And I start talking with my friends, but why? And they, almost everybody, I think everybody said, because she's a girl.
I know, ultimately that's what it is, but nobody will like just come out and say that directly. Yeah. Make all kinds of other excuses, but they never criticized a man doing it, you know, and men have been doing this since the 90s, making videos about themselves, setting records, and nobody cared. And they're still doing it, and nobody cares when they do it. They only care when I do it. So yeah. I don't know, but you know what? I feel like I've thought about it so much because I do want to make sure like I'm not getting advantage it for like sneaky things. So I've thought like, is there some truth to this? And then at the end of it, no, it's just, it's ridiculous. And I mean, it's like, okay. And it's also like, it's such a shame to make these rules because then nobody else can share their stories either. It's not just about what I'm doing. I want other people to take the stuff on and share their stories too. And then also the next person who comes and breaks the record, it's like, they'll have nothing to show from it, you know? And it's like, yeah, that's,
I understand that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I hope that this kind of pushes people to change the rules, to think about it, to change the rules so we can keep sharing these stories.
And I think that's the best part, is sharing the stories. And because of the work, although you still have that, I think it's a school, that program, GRIT.
Yeah, yeah.
I read about that and I enjoyed, I liked the idea. So you went to
Yeah, so I can talk a bit about GRIT. I started my first program in Alaska with a friend where I'm from, and it was for 12 and 13 year old girls. Girls that have really, they usually know how to ride a bike, but they've never ridden more than like 8K maybe. And then we ride with them for 6 weeks to build up to a 100K adventure weekend ride, where they ride from their school out to some cabins that are like near a glacier. It's a huge challenge, but they carry their own stuff. And it's amazing to see them improve on the bike, gain confidence. And then after that, by going through the program, they earn the bike so they can ride them wherever they want, and they can come back in future years as student mentors. So I've done that for 3 years in Alaska. This year I had a friend take over in Alaska for the fourth year, and I started a new one in Arizona. So it's been,
well, I'm very excited about that.
We've worked with something like probably like 75 girls. They're not necessarily like athletic. It's not about competition. It's just about spending time outside, riding, taking on challenges, finding out what you can do and what it's like to travel by bike, the adventure of it. And it's so cool because that age, you know, it's like that age you really want to do something hard, and you're kind of making that change from being with your parents all the time. You want this freedom. So it's the perfect age for them to do this and to like learn about themselves. So I really love that.
It was hard to you to start the project, or you, the people, your sponsors, the local government in Anchorage, I don't know if they gave you some help or not.
Yeah, I mean, it was really just started from this idea. And then I was like, well, what do we need to actually do it? So I asked Specialized to provide bikes, which they have. And I got in touch with the principals at the schools to see if they'd be interested in this happening at their school, and then ask if they had women teachers or counselors that wanted to nominate students and see if we could store the bikes at school. And so it was like just getting the little pieces together and then finding volunteers, local volunteers to help. Cause it's like, especially in Tucson, I had one adult for every student. So then the students would have like this adult to kind of help them along and be responsible for them, and they form a relationship. So it takes a lot of people, but it's not too expensive because it's really, you need bikes and, you know, you need to pay, like I had to pay for camping, but, and I got some food donated, and all the volunteers aren't getting paid. So it's pretty simple, but it just takes time and people, but it's also only for 6 weeks. So most people can do something for 6 weeks and then it's over. But it's so cool to see them kind of, they start and they're so shy and they're so timid. And then by the end, they're riding trails and they're so confident and they're so open. So I love that change. It's been really, really cool to see.
You start that in Alaska. I never been there. I think that it's a little bit hard to living in Alaska, especially in Anchorage. I don't know. I only see on the television And I always said, oh, I want to go to Alaska just to see if it's true, the people.
You have to go. It's beautiful. But yeah, it's always, I always start it the latest I can in the school year. So it starts in April, but there's always still snow. So the girls are pushing their bikes through snow, usually for the first 2 weeks. But I mean, that's just how it is. You know, it's like, we want to be out there riding. So they have to be a little bit tougher. And then it was the opposite in Arizona. It was, by the end, it was so hot that they're hiding under a bridge trying to get some shade. But, you know, I mean, it's good for things to be a little bit challenging. It's like, that's when you kind of learn the most about yourself. And those are the things you remember.
That's true. And in the bike world, or in the bike packing, or wherever you do on your bike, I think I always say this to the people. It's the freedom. You can be like fat like me, doesn't matter, or a skinny guy, but you can go by your own. You can do 20 Ks per day or 100 if you want. And that's the best part.
Yeah, and the girls can choose what pace they go, who they ride with, you know, and all this stuff. And we always stop to have snacks. And then, I mean, also camping out for the night, you know, there's something about putting a sleeping bag on your bike and riding somewhere and then sleeping under the stars. It's like, there's nothing like that. None of them had ever had that experience before. I mean, so many adults have never done that. So it's really cool to take kids to do that. I mean, it's great to do it with adults as well, but there's something about kids that they're just like, that could change kind of their direction.
I think because, you know, when they are happy, you can see on their eyes, they are very pure in the things that they say.
Try so hard. Yeah. They're so cute.
One more thing. You start riding your bike when you start riding bikes and you said for you, okay, this is the life that I want. A few years ago, it was a life changer for you, that trip that you take until your sister's. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that was so, I've never had a car and I've never learned how to drive, which is very unusual for an American. We drive everywhere.
I have one question about that, because I read somewhere that you have been like driving 10 times in your life or something like that.
At the most, that's a stretch, maybe 5. And it terrifies me. I'm like shaking.
Yeah. You know, that's not normal for an American.
No, we drive everywhere in huge trucks. But yeah, so I've never had a car. So I used to just walk everywhere. I got a job that was like 6K away. And I was like, oh, it takes too long to walk there. So I started borrowing a bike to get to work. And then I was like, oh, this is amazing. You know, compared to walking, it's so much faster. And then actually at that time, so I was working, but I was like a student. I didn't have any money and I wanted to visit my sister in the next city over. And it was something like 80K away. And I usually took the bus, which was $2.50, but I didn't even have $2.50. I was like, I don't have any money. I can't take the bus. But I was like, what if I rode my bike there? So that's what I did. I printed out directions, like a big stack of directions, because I didn't have a smartphone.
The old school way, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like turn by turn, riding to the next city. And I think that's when I had the idea. I was like, oh, if I could ride to the next city, I could ride across the US. And I'd never heard of anybody doing that. You know, I'd never seen it before. And so then that was like my big dream. So a couple months later, that's what I did. I rode down the East Coast. And I thought at the time, I'll just do this one trip and then I'll go back to medical school and I'll become a doctor. And then I never stopped riding my bike. I was just like, you know, I rode down the East. I got a job at a restaurant to save money. And then I started riding across the South. And this was in 2008. And I've just kept at it since. I mean, for a long time, it was riding and then working in restaurants to save money to ride again. And for 7 years, it was like that. The trips got a little more adventurous, going to Europe and South Africa and the Middle East and finding like more interesting places to ride. It was really just the way to see the world. And then while I was traveling like this, I ended up entering a race, something I never thought I'd do. And then found out it was something I was actually really good at. So I was like, wow, I didn't know I could, you know, just keep going. and I actually loved
that's
it.
That's a very strange so way to funny. Start on the racing, on the bike
I know. Race. And I mean, you're talking about like women participating, you know, it's like every race I'd show up at, I was like the only woman. I'm on this like pretty crummy bike, you know, I'm wearing running shoes. It looked like a joke. They're like, what is she doing here? Is she serious?
You feel difference when you start? No, because the person that you are right now, because I imagine that you arrived to a place and the people said, okay, there's Lael, so give her some respect. But if you see difference, how the people, or how the men in this case look for your fellow cyclists?
If there's been a change for reception, you know, I wish there was more of a change. I am seeing more women participating, but yeah. It's, especially for racing, it's growing. It's like a slow increase, very slow. But for touring or for rallies, many more women are entering. But for racing, it's still like, I mean, if you get 20% women, that's huge. Usually it's like 5 to 10%, maybe.
20%, it's a very good, unfortunately, yeah. It's a very good number, yes.
It's really, really high if you get that many, and usually it's not. And it's not always the organizer's fault, because they like do everything they can to encourage women, but women just don't show up. But I'm starting to just ask, like specifically invite friends that I think might do it. And then if you ask them directly, they actually might do it. Like I did a race in Spain in May, and we had three women in the top eight finishers, like, that's never happened before, ever. And they, one of them, it was her first endurance race. The other one, it was her second. And they just like, they went crazy. They slept, I think, a total of like 4 hours the whole race. And they did so well, and they beat so many of the men, and they just like, and you know, I mean, this is so cool to see, because none of us look like particularly strong or athletic. We all look pretty average, but then at the end of the day, it's like, who shows up, who gets to the finish line first, you know, which I think is, it proves a lot to have more. Like if I do it, it's one thing, people are like, oh, she's crazy. But if you have like two other women also, then it starts to seem like a real thing, which I find really inspiring.
When I, the other day I was talking with Barbara, my colleague that talked to you, and we were talking about, like, she's not upset that I'm talking about this, about how the guys here in Portugal sometimes talk to the girls when they are riding their bikes. Mm-hmm. And I always said, these guys live in the, not in this center, you know, because they, man, let them ride. You are not a pro, you know? And I think that's one kind of the things that pushes away sometimes the women from our sport in general, because you must start for riding your bike with your friends, Sunday rides, and after you're probably gonna pursue the dream of bike racing. But if you don't feel cool,
right, there's a lot of it's I think part, a lot of it is like having like men constantly question what you're doing or doubting you. Is that safe? Are you gonna make it? You know, just all these questions where it's like they might not ask those questions to a guy. And then it makes you like doubt yourself as well. But then I think the way to kind of, the reaction is that if you create opportunities for women to challenge themselves and then gain their own confidence, then maybe the next time they will go, that might be in like a women's specific event, but then maybe the next time they'll have enough confidence to like go to an event where there are men and women riding together, because they know they've proven to themselves that they can do it. But yeah, it is tough. It's like an extra hurdle to overcome.
Yeah, that's not cool, because you need to try harder than the rest of the guys.
Right. Yeah. And then there are always, I mean, bikepacking is complicated. It's like there's so many things you could be afraid of. You know, it's like sleeping outside, or are you a good enough mechanic, or can you navigate? Do you have the equipment you need? Do you have the right bike? You know, all these things are like kind of, you sit at home and you're like, I don't know. But then I think the thing is, once you actually get out there, it's like you realize, oh, none of this stuff is that big of a deal. Nobody's
to me a lot, the mechanic.
Yeah. Things. But you just have to get started, you know, and then you're like, I'll figure it out as I go. It's okay.
My last two trips, I don't have finished it because of problems in my mechanical problems. And I am always saying that I need to improve my mechanic skills. So
yeah, but at least you're riding. Yeah. You know, I mean, and then crazy stuff can happen. Stuff that you don't expect to break can break. And, you know, it's not the end of the world, because it's also like you could see it. Everything you got to ride up to that point is the success.
And you know? you see that difference in Europe here when you've been riding in Spain or in US, for example, like you have raced Unbound, and now you have raced in Africa, no? Last month?
Kenya, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those are actually both great examples of races that are really trying to encourage women to participate. Both Unbound and Migration Gravel did a really good job getting a strong women's field, but you do have to like make it very obvious, like saying we want more women to ride and inviting more women to ride for that to actually happen. But both of those races have been really good about that.
You felt difference, the people, I don't know. I want to try Unbound next year. I will try to catch a slot for me and see if I can train and go there. But yeah. I see the gravel scene, for example, or the bike scene, that kind of bike scene in US, very different than here. I don't know. Because I saw so many ex-pros living a second life, if we tell our
kids. Well, it's become highly competitive. I mean, it's wild. It's like top level racing, you know, Unbound. It's, and even all of these gravel races are getting to that point. But, you know, the cool part is that there is this very competitive edge, but then it's also like everybody else is invited to be there too. You know, it's like for so many people, it's just about finishing, you know, or even just showing up in the first place. So I like that there's a wide range. It's like the guys in the front are doing whatever they can to win, and everybody else, it's like to the extent of locals from Emporia, Kansas are just like, I'm going to ride the, you know, 50 mile race. And that's like the biggest ride of their life. And everybody is cheered for and everybody's welcome. So I think that community, that's really, they've proven that this could be a good place for a lot of people.
And you feel there's no difference. So in the treatment, because there are so many ex-pros, so people that used to live on the peloton, and what I see for the by Instagram and the other things, it's the people go there, cheer the guys, everybody took pictures with them. A nice environment, I think.
Yeah, it's a good community event, you know, and they have all these local volunteers checking everybody in, and everybody's super kind and welcoming. And I think, and I mean, it's not for money either. It's like, you win, great. People cheer for you, but people will also cheer for you if you are the last finisher, you know? So I think that there's something really nice about that. Like, it's simply just to be out riding.
I remember last year I spoke with Juliet Elliott. I think she was and she said that the thing that she liked, it was ride the bike. She said, you know, sometimes I don't want to train. I just want to ride my bike and forget that I have to make my train, because I might be riding my bike.
Yeah. Yeah. She was at Migration Gravel. She's great. And her background is BMX riding. You know,
BMX, I mean, fix it bike, snowboard. It's.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, that's the cool thing that I feel like with the gravel stuff and endurance, it's getting people from so many different places. Like the woman who won Migration Gravel was an ex-pro road racer, and that was her second off-road experience ever. Her first was Unbound. You know, I mean, this is like drawing people from all over the place, which I think is good, because then we interact with each other, we learn from each other, and it's a lot more fun than just always being with the same people.
You have some feminine references in the US cycling before. When you start riding, you don't know nothing about the sport, but you try to read about, I don't know. I remember when I started riding mountain bike, Julie Furtado was.
Yeah, she's huge.
I still have a poster of her in my room.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, I came to it from such a weird place that I didn't know anything. And I didn't think of it as a sport. It was like transportation and travel. So, you know, it's like I read some books by women who are like traveling the world by bike. There's this Irish woman named Dervla Murphy who wrote like at least a dozen books about going to all these different exotic places by bike. And then that's what I would read, like her adventures, you know, but I didn't think about like being a mountain biker or or being a racer, definitely not. So I came to it from such a different place that I didn't really have any role models like that.
But you feel like you are role models for some of us here.
I don't know. I get messages from people that are, you know, it's really cool. They're like, hey, I watched this video and then I went out for a bike ride in the rain, even though I didn't want to do it. And then I felt so much better about myself. You know, these are like the messages I get from people, is that they were inspired to go do something, which I think is like the best reaction. You know, it's like you see something and then you go outside and go push yourself a little bit and then feel good about yourself. So that's really, really cool.
That kind of message helps you for some reason in your bad days.
Definitely. Yeah, because sometimes you get out. I mean, I'm out there. I'm like, this is terrible. I'm in so much pain. You know, I'm like, oh my God. But then, I mean, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, well, I decided to do this. I'm just going to keep going, of course. But it is nice to like, I think the thing is like, I couldn't just only race in like, that's like my only thing. I have to do other things like running a grip program or women's rallies or women's adventure scholarships, because then it helps me to connect to other people and hear their stories. And that inspires me to keep trying my hardest, because sometimes you're like, who cares, you know, how many days it takes you to do something. That's actually not that interesting, versus like somebody's story of like, you know, being a mom, working full time, and then later in life, finding out this is something they could do. Or it's like another woman from like a rally. She was like, her background was downhill racing, you know, and now she's like traveling by bike. And so when I hear like stories, different stories, that inspires me to keep going and also gives me something to think about while I'm by myself for hundreds of hours.
Do you feel support when you talk with your sponsors and tell them I want to make a trip only for women to support, because we must talk about our presence in the sport? You feel that they are with you in that kind of...
I mean these women's rallies we started running, I started working with Komoot to put these on, and the first one was on the Torino Nice rally route last September. We did another one in Spain this April, and we'll go scout a new route in Slovenia in August, and that's all because I have the help of Komoot. You know, and then I feel like my sponsors are really great. They're always, because what I do is so different. You know, it's like, I don't have a team. I don't have a manager. I don't really have a normal schedule. I just write a schedule of all the dreams I have for the year and then see if they, you know, want to support any with video projects or anything like that. But usually they're like, just keep doing what you're doing, you know? And I basically have my dream job. It took a long time to get to this point,
because you must work a lot before
you got that. I mean, I did it for, you know, 10 years just paying for it. And now I get to ride full time and I don't have to work another job. But it is really cool to have that freedom to, you know, basically do whatever I want. I mean, I'm always trying really hard and I fit in as much as I can, but they're all my own ideas. So then I also am like,
that's cool. Yeah.
If I'm like having a hard time, I'm like, well, I made this up. So there's nobody else to blame. You know, it's like, it was my idea. I better just stick with it, because, you know, it gets hard.
And you kind of live your dream with Rue, no? So.
Yes. Yeah. So my wife.
That's a very beautiful thing.
Yeah, my wife is shooting all the videos and photos, and so it's something that we get to do together, which is really amazing.
When I realized that you work together and you leave your dream job, and she's leaving your dream job as well, no, that's very cool and very beautiful. It's cool at the end of the day to support each other.
It's amazing that it worked out. You know, because it's like, I think 4 years ago we're just working at a pizza place together. And now we don't have to do that, which is great. And it's like, you know, somebody else can serve pizza. We get to like do the things that we really want to do and share these stories and try to get more people on bike. So it's been amazing that it's all worked out.
That's very, very, very cool. When we start talking, I talk to you about the, it's a podcast bike, but I want to talk about everything. And we were talking about the strange times that we're living.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, for me, it's unfortunately. For you, it's unfortunately too. for some reason you think change for another country if the things in US continue on that way?
Yeah, it's pretty scary actually right now in the US, because you kind of wonder what's next. You know, it's like they took away abortion rights. There are all these mass shootings going on. And then it's also like, well, I'm gay. You know, I'm married to a woman. Is that freedom going to be questioned or taken away? You know, it's like the direction, it's a very kind of insecure time. And people are really passionate one way or the other. There's not a lot of people with a lot of understanding at this point. So it is a little scary. I don't know, you know, yeah, that's just tough. It's depressing, but it's also like, yeah, and I guess Rue and I just have been out of the country for all of this. We just came back a couple of days ago. So you do feel like you're not so connected to it when you're not in the middle of it, but definitely a scary time. And I'm just hoping for the best.
Sorry about this question, but it's important for me because I'm European. So I think more or less, I live a different world that you live, mm-hmm. because you've been there lots of times. I think it depends here of the country, but it's very different of US in everything. We don't have the problems with guns. We don't have so mass shootings.
Right.
We don't have riots. We have problems as well with racism a lot, and the people still don't want to talk about that.
Right.
But we don't have that kind of things, you know, the... Mm-hmm. F penalty. So sometimes when I start reading about things in US and about the gay rights and everything, that it's very strange. And I'm a white guy, so yeah. I know that the people look to me and okay, you can go.
No, I mean, yeah, it's definitely a different place. I mean, like in your day-to-day life, things generally seem pretty normal here. But then when, you know, you see what's actually happening in different places around the country, it's shocking and terrifying at the same time. And I mean, then, you know, we're in Europe and it's like people seem to care more about each other there. You know, you actually like, you don't work like 100 hours a week and you sit down for meals and you make time for your family. And, you know,
more or less, but yet it's different. We are not so, I don't know if it's the correct word. Capitalism or so.
Yeah, but it's like it's like that's what's expected. But then I mean, like I'm saying that and I don't do that. You know, I haven't had like a regular job for 4 years. Yep. And that's like that we have like all these little subcultures too of people that are just doing something different, but like the common path is for people to, you know, get a job and only have like 2 weeks off a year. That's terrible. You know, and then
imagine living like that, because here you have 1 month, you know, 25 days.
Yeah.
Of paid vacations for everybody. It's not right. The much thing. It's
yeah, no, that's not even that much. I mean, yeah. You know, for the whole year, but it's yeah. Like, you know, 2 weeks for an entire year. And then even with that, people don't want to take the time off because when they come back, they'll be behind in their work. And I don't know, it's pretty crazy. You know, that's not sustainable.
Let's gonna change a little bit this part, but thanks to explain us and to tell us your opinion about these kind of things in our life. About the human's presence on the cycling, you feel that the brands are working more to bring out more women to the sport? I don't know.
Definitely.
In bikes, in how they communicate,
clothes,
everything.
The companies that I work with definitely are, you know, and that's a big reason why I'm working with them in the first place. Brands like, or companies like Komoot, they employ so many women. So if women are working there, they're going to care about women riding. Or SRAM, half of SRAM are women, you know, so they really care about having more women on bikes. And that's really cool to see. But I feel like for the most part, like, all my sponsors are super supportive. And I feel really grateful for that. And it's not about, you know, how much I win. It's like, it's the other projects that they might even care more about, like doing things like the Grit program or the women's rallies. They care more about, and they want to see that happen. So they give me the support that I need to make it happen, which is really cool. that makes me feel really hopeful for the sport.
That's very cool. I think we must talk about make something like that here in Portugal.
Yeah, I would love that. I would really love that.
I leave the challenge here, and then Barbara gonna talk with you about that.
Yeah, put it. We have to talk more about that because I would love that. I've never been to Portugal, and people keep sending me pictures of what it looks like there, and it looks so beautiful. It looks incredible.
We are a very small country, even for some people that think that we are in Spain. We are neighbors, not the same country. But I think it's a good idea, and I'm gonna leave this year, and then when this ends, Barbara gonna talk with you about this.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to do that.
I want to ask you, what was the experience to race in Africa in a such special race like that?
Oh, Migration Gravel, it was amazing. So it was a 4-day stage race in the Masai Mara with all these animals around, zebra and giraffes, wildebeest. And half the racers were Africans, half Europeans, some Americans. It was really cool. It was really, really hard. The stages were between 130 and 170K, I think, on really rough terrain, like rough gravel. Half the people were on gravel bikes, half on mountain bikes. Really hard pace and rough roads, animals, people on motorcycles, trucks. It was just chaos, dust everywhere. Everybody was having mechanicals and crashing, and it was a real adventure race. And then at night, so we would finish the stage and then we'd all sleep in tents and have dinner together, have breakfast in the morning, and then race again.
I saw the showers and it was interesting, I think.
Yeah, they had like bucket showers as like a little tent. And then it was actually nice because these guys were heating up the water. So we actually had warm water, but they would just pour water into these buckets that had a little like shower head. So basically your shower was as long as the bucket lasted. And then that was it.
You think that these kind of races are good, for example, for the cyclists, for the African cyclists?
Definitely. They've done a really good job putting on this race so that the locals have like a good field of competition. And then also people can come and see what it's like to ride in Africa. You know, I think it's a great opportunity for people like me, but also for the locals because they have the advantage. They know the routes, they know that kind of riding. So for once they have an advantage at these races, which is good because otherwise we always have an advantage in the US or Europe, you know, and then Africans coming to those races, it's expensive for them. And you know, they don't know the routes. Maybe they don't know the language. It's always harder. So
even the bikes could not be the same. I don't know because.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
I think Cape Epic last year, Lachlan Martin and the other guy that I don't remember, really sorry, that EF took place there. And it was such a special history when Lachlan said, "You can come with me." And the guy was, "Okay, yeah, I never race, but yes, I go."
Yeah, I mean,
so much that video because I think they created like a very sweet bond between each other.
Yeah, that's super cool. That's awesome. Yeah, Lachlan was there too this year, yeah, and
with mechanic problems again. No,
yeah, a lot of rush, that.
Very bad.
I mean, there are all sorts of, you know, Matteo is there as well, and yeah, he broke his chain, I think, 3 times. All these people had like all these problems. I had 0 mechanicals, no problems.
So a Portuguese and a Brazilian couple, yes, Miguel and Juliana.
I spent time with them. They were so awesome.
I never met them. I speak with them through the Instagram and social media. So now I always remember, that couple
they were super cool. I had breakfast and dinner with them every day and rode with Miguel a bit. It's really cool how it brings people together, you know, these races, we're all in Africa together. And I mean, you don't even have cell phone service. So basically you're just talking and that's it.
We're not afraid of the animals. I don't know, because the first thing that I remember, if you told me, oh no, racing in Africa, lions, elephants, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I had like gazelles just jump across the road right in front of me. I had wildebeest do the same. I was riding through herds of zebra. It was amazing, you know, but I mean, they're so cool to see. And then we did a drive the day after the race and we saw a lion and cheetahs and elephants. And I you know, it's like, it's amazing to see these animals for yourself, like just looking at them, you know, you'd never know what that was like until you do it. So that was amazing to see.
You ever rode a gravel bike?
Yes. Yeah, I rode a gravel bike, but I had a suspension fork.
That's the point that I want to worry you about.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you, I don't like it. Sorry.
The suspension fork.
Yes. No, because for me, gravel bikes could not, they are not able to be, it's not the same thing, ride a gravel bike with a suspension fork. But yeah, everybody, I understand.
Everybody was jealous.
Because
it was so rough, you know, but then, like the thing is, otherwise people were on mountain bikes, but then there were some fast sections. So ultimately you do want to be on a gravel bike, but you were doing a lot of this, like just shaking. So having suspension just made it so much better.
So much better.
Yeah. Because it was less rough on my hands and my body. Cause we just got, you know, just not
hot as well. No.
Was that
hot? Too hot on that day?
No, it wasn't too bad. It was actually, it's their cool season. So it was actually perfect riding weather. Like when we started in the morning, you'd be a little bit cold, but then warm up right away. So it wasn't, it was probably like 22 degrees. It's really nice. Yeah.
I like that you talked to me in degrees and in kilometers.
I tried.
I was prepared to start making.
That's not fair, you know, just because I'm American. I think in miles.
Yeah.
But I try not to.
Yeah, but it's normal for you because you work with another system. So
yeah, we do.
Let me ask you, favorite race in the planet or favorite place riding the bike where?
Oh, I mean, that's so hard. You know, I'm from Alaska, so riding there is pretty amazing. It's super wild, really good gravel with lots of animals, but other animals, grizzly bears and moose and caribou. So I love that. I really anywhere with big mountains, I love riding. Switzerland, Kyrgyzstan. I love riding in Europe, in the Alps, you know, all these places are really incredible. So
I don't know. I never been there, but I have a very...
So cool. Yeah, I did the Trans-Balkan race this year and it was amazing, especially Bosnia and Montenegro. So beautiful, just amazing mountains, very few trees, huge views, still very wild. I even saw a bear in Bosnia. I couldn't believe it. You know, it's like, it's still a very wild place. So that was a lot of fun too. But yeah, anywhere with really nice big mountains, I'm just happy to be there.
So when we make same thing in Portugal, we go to the mountains. We don't have big mountains, but we arrange same thing here. Eh?
Yeah, big enough.
Yeah. How do you saw the professional cycling? Now I'm talking about road cycling.
Mm-hmm.
For you, as a human cyclist, how you see, I don't know, your colleagues or something like that, you see that they are paid well and they are recognized by the effort that they make or not? Because
I think it's hard, you know, and I think the cycling world is changing a bit, where it used to really be focused on the road racers, like the Tour de France, you know, the pro tour basically. And then everybody wanted to buy bikes like the pros rode. But now it's like, I think people are realizing, oh, that bike isn't really what works for me. So there's like a wider range of possibilities. Do you want to ride gravel or do you want to go bikepacking or, you know, do you want to be commuting, all this stuff? So I feel like there's less focus on professional riding. I think there's always a place for it, you know, because you want to see what's the top level of any sport. I don't follow it personally. It's popping up a lot in my Instagram right now, but
yeah, because it's a
Tour of France, so because it's a biggest event of the whole year, you know. But I guess ultimately I feel like there's so many different ways you can ride and everyone should be able to do what they want to do on the bike. And maybe people want to do multiple things. You know, they want to be a bike packer. They also want to ride to work. They also want to race road, you know, especially like when people participate in a lot of different things, that's maybe the most exciting. I like to mix it up.
That's the reason I started riding my gravel bike. Or when I started riding gravel, and I was not thinking about gravel. I was thinking about having a bike that I could go to the roads and go to the dirt as well. So for me, it was like,
yeah, you want to go more places. So
when people ask me, "Hey Gustavo, please help me. I want to buy a bike." The first thing,
where do you want to go? Yeah. Right.
And then we start talking about all these things, and that's
right. But that's what you should be talking about, you know, not about the equipment. You should be talking about what you want to do with it. And
that's the first question. The second is, which is your budget? Because we need a budget for everything.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you want to go? How much money do you want to spend? You know, and then, I mean, the great thing is, like, there are affordable options, you know. Everybody can get on a bike on some level, which is really cool. And that, I don't think the experience changes that much. You know, it's like you're pedaling, you're outside, you're moving. It's good.
Yeah. And that's the good part of the bike. You can go with a $200 bike or €200 bike, or with a $500, and you can do the same thing that like the bras. So that's a very cool thing about the bike. Mm-hmm. And you prefer just riding your bike or bikepacking always?
Oh, I like all of it. Yeah, I like any time I spend on my bike. I'm just happy to be doing it, basically. But riding new places is definitely more exciting. You know, when I get to ride somewhere new that I haven't seen before, especially if I get to do it with Rue, that's the best. And this summer I got to do a lot of racing in new places, and that was so exciting because it was like motivating to keep going to see what was going to come next. So I don't think that'll ever get old, but I also just like love riding to the store, riding across town. You know, it's like, I just, that feeling of being on your bike, moving through space, seeing things, and it gives you time to think. So I love all of it.
You have a very strict plan.
Do I have a training plan? No, not at all.
No, I thought, really?
Yeah.
You race a lot. You must.
I know. I think,
it's
not, you know,
it's only crazy.
Like, the racing is the training. At least this summer, it was like I would race and then I would do nothing for a week, and then I would race again and then nothing for a week. And that was like the only way I could survive.
That's cool. Even with the food, you don't have nobody to.
No, I mean, I've started working with like a couple of nutrition sponsors, which helps, because then I have like a protein recovery shake, you know, more nutritious supplements, I guess. But otherwise, the main thing is I just have to eat a lot. And hopefully it's good food. You know, in Europe, it's always good food. Actually, Kenya was fantastic food too. Sometimes in Alaska, there's no food, and that's really terrible.
Because of the environment and everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's also some of the fun of these races are you have to figure out, where can I get food? Where can I get water? Where can I sleep? What money do they use? What language do they speak? You know, it's like you're learning about a place by just passing through it on the bike, and that never gets old. It's like you're thinking about the place you're riding through, why people are there, what they're doing. You get to meet them, you know, so it's such a cool way to learn.
You feel that pressure when you are riding ultra bike races, and you must think, now I must sleep because I'm very tired, or I must sleep because I don't know if I have another place where I can sleep.
I try to be pretty strategic about it, but the thing is, people are not sleeping at all. You know, more and more people are sleeping less and less, and I don't like that. I mean, I sleep like 4 hours a night, so it's not a ton, but it's enough.
4 hours, it's 4 hours. Huh?
4 hours is pretty good, but then other people, zero. And then they catch me because they're not sleeping. You know, they have 4 more hours to ride, and then I wake up and they're with me and I'm like, ah, you know, so I try to sleep sometime at night when it's dark is usually my plan, because you slow down in the dark often, you don't ride as fast. So if I sleep at that time, then, you know, even if it's early, then I can wake up in the middle of the night and continue on. And that's usually my plan. But yeah, it's getting to the point where
People don't sleep. Don't want to sleep because they just want to win.
And then you don't enjoy it. You know, you're not like enjoying this beautiful place you're riding through because you're so tired. You know, and I see it on their faces too. They look so bad.
When you talk to someone that starts racing and you give me some tips, the first thing that the guys told you, they are telling to me, you must try to ride your bike without sleeping. I don't want to.
No.
My bike and not be happy.
I mean, it also depends how long the race will take. If it's finished in a day, definitely no sleep. 2 days, probably no sleep. But anything longer than that, I mean, I have to sleep. Otherwise, I feel terrible. And you don't ride as fast. You don't have as much fun. So I don't know. I'm sleeping because I want to enjoy it.
When you won the Arizona weight entry, you enjoy it during the 8 days?
It was so hard. Nine days. Yeah, I was sleeping for 4 hours a night. And it was just so hard. I mean, but the thing is, it was also so beautiful. It was like Arizona when all the cactus are blooming. There were flowers everywhere. I saw every sunset and every sunrise. I saw so much beauty, but I mean, it was relentless. It's a really, really hard trail, very technical, nonstop challenges, super hot in the desert. And then I'd go, you know, up to 3,000 meters and it was snow and freezing. So it was just constant challenge.
Your bike, so it was not only riding your bike, but pushing your bike as well.
Yeah. I mean, I even brought two pairs of shoes. I had bike shoes and running shoes because I knew I would be pushing so much. So I would change my shoes and just walk for an hour.
It's a very, very clever decision.
I've never seen anybody else do that. It's kind of wacky, but it actually really worked. It was good.
It works because, you know, you have studied the route and you know that.
I'd ridden it before, so I knew, and I knew I would be happier because your feet start to hurt so much from walking in bike shoes that you really slow down. So I knew if I put on these running shoes, I'll go a lot faster. It's worth taking the time to switch shoes and carry them and everything, but it was actually worked out really well.
Which is your favorite food during your bike rides?
Probably ice cream.
Ice cream?
Because it's really high calorie. It always tastes good. Often I'll just let it melt and then I'll drink it.
For me, it's Haribo.
Really?
Sweets, yes, and Coke. I only drink Coke when I'm riding my bike.
Coke never gets old. That's really good.
Sometimes a beer during the summer, or a couple. Yeah. no more than that. And now, before we finish, which is the thing, since you start riding bikes, the thing that you see that have changed on the bikes and that helps you to increase your performance?
I mean, a lot of the equipment has gotten a lot better. Electronic shifting, amazing. Hydraulic disc brakes, amazing. Larger volume tires, tubeless, all this stuff has just made everything so much better. You know, it's like, I can't believe the bikes we get to ride now. They're so light, so capable, so good. It's like, and they just seem to keep getting better and better. So I'm super grateful all that stuff has happened.
I was thinking about the GPS. I don't know why, but for me,
that's like
my life when I start riding with that.
Totally.
To ride with that small computer.
Well, and it's also like it will make you go more adventurous places because you know that the route will go through. When I started touring, I would just go on like a big road because I was like, oh, I can ride this for 500K, never make a turn. You know, I'll get there, but that's not as interesting as like taking a little route through the mountains or going somewhere else. So you're probably right. That's the biggest change, GPS.
For me, it is. Sometimes when you are riding your bike or when you're during your bike trips, you felt that you were in danger.
No.
Really in danger situation.
I mean, I had a grizzly bear come at me once. That was bad.
But you're from Alaska, so it's.
Yeah, but I'm like, this could kill me, but then it didn't. I mean, I've had a few close calls, I think in traffic. That's probably the biggest threat is getting hit by a car, but really nothing too bad. I've never felt in danger with people or camping. Every country, everyone's been kind and friendly. So I think really on the bike, you get to see the good side of the world. You know, people are curious about what you're doing. They're kind. They always invite you in to eat something or sleep at their house. And you never get that in regular life. So it's such a gift.
So the last question before we finish this cranking, and I hope that you are enjoying our talk here. But I don't know what you say to a girl, to a woman that wants to start riding her bike, and she never, she's afraid because she only see men's riding bikes.
Yeah, I would. Well, I mean, I'd probably ask her kind of the same as you. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? What excites you about it? Why do you want to ride your bike? You know, and then start there, and then. Because some people like to be solo. Some people like to be with friends. Invite your friends, join a group, go for a rally, or do it on your own and make your own trip and make it special for you. Because the thing is, I think sometimes people feel like they have to take on a huge challenge, but that's, you don't have to do that to yourself. You could simply go from home, camp out for the night and ride home again. And you will learn so much from that simple overnight. So starting with something like that's great. I always will encourage people to try bike packing because it's what I love the most. It's an adventure. You get to carry what you need, be outside, do it on your own. But really, you know, making it personal, taking on a challenge that means something to you, I think that's where you have to start.
So I think that's a very good tip to the ones that are listening to us here. And I have one more, sorry, because I saw that you have made some TED Talks or one, and you in the photo that I see the description, it's that you are afraid to talk in public.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this was like, they asked me to do a TED Talk and it was in Anchorage, Alaska, my hometown. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do it, but I should do this. I have to do this. So I practiced so much to do it. And it went great. It really went great. But yeah, that was when I started winning races. People always asked me to come give talks. And at first I was like, no way, I will never do it.
And it's not because of the business. It's important for us to listen to people like you.
Yeah, I mean, and also I guess, so when I started giving talks, I said, okay, what I can do is do like a Q&A, questions and answers. And then that way I know what people want to hear about. I just answer their questions. It's easy. And that's how I started doing it. And then from there, you know, it's like I gained more confidence and now I'm okay speaking in front of people, even in a more formal setting. But it took years of practice and that definitely stresses me out so much more than, you know, getting to the start line of 4,000 kilometer race, which is crazy. It's just
That's a very good point to start thinking about.
Yeah. You know, but it's like, if other people can face their own fears and take on their own challenges, I have to do the same. You know, it's like, I have to kind of live by what I'm saying. Just because I'm not scared of riding my bike doesn't mean I'm not scared of other things, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I think that it's everybody for us here. Many thanks for being here and between your schedule. And I let you know when we put this on air and everything. And then we're going to talk with Barbara about
camping
here in Portugal, okay?
I would love that. Great talking with you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.